Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Clay Dunbar. And Clay's one of those guys that I hang around and I get to laugh a lot. You know, he's got a bunch of energy and he's come to Columbus. He was in one of the Ashtanga and Addiction forums to, you know, to really help be part of the solution. And today I'm sitting with him in his backyard in Alabama. And we're trying to figure out a little bit about who Clay is, because he's got a hell of a personality. So Clay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about background first. So tell me just a little bit about where you came from. Like, are you from Alabama? You know, like what about high school? Like, tell me a little bit about like just your background.
Yeah. So I'm from a suburban town in Birmingham, basically called Mountain Brook. And it's sort of a pretty well-to-do community. And basically I grew up just kind of like spoiled and overprivileged.
And that sounds familiar. Yeah. I mean, me too, really.
Yeah, you know, you can't help where you come from. So once when asked where you're from, a person said Alabama, and Jerry Garcia replied, well, everybody's got to be from somewhere.
Yeah.
And so I am.
Awesome. And so tell us a little bit about you, like in your high school years or like in your early years.
Yeah.
What were you like?
I was real confused. I mean, I basically had, you know, identity. I didn't have my own identity. You know, I had the one that mom and dad wanted me to be. And, you know, I had the peer pressure of what the kids around here were like, but I just felt like an alien, you know?
Why?
I just never felt like I fit in and didn't feel, you know, quite right. I was always trying to identify myself and behave like a cliches, the way I understood certain cliches of different people acted. Anybody who'd take me, really.
Okay. And so what did your parents want you to act like?
Well, they wanted me to be, you know, very conservative, you know, like a Christian Bible person and stuff, which is, I get, but, you know, I wasn't that good at it.
You weren't good at beating the Bible up?
No. Well, I mean, I read it a lot and actually liked quite a lot of it.
Yeah, same.
But the way it was presented to me and the churches and institutions that they attempted to present this information to me is different than I currently understand things to be. So, you know, I never thought that was quite right, but they always gave me the fear of hellfire and damnation. So that's a hell of an incentive to sort of conform, or at least try to convince yourself that you're conforming.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah, because who wants to go there?
No, yeah. No. Eternal hellfire is a bad deal.
It's a bad deal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so you didn't fit in with church, and you also didn't fit in high school either?
Not really. You know, like I said, it's kind of a rich kid community around here. Everyone thinks their daddy's the president of America around here. And so, like, you know, it wasn't my scene at all. And they sent me off to boarding school in Chattanooga, which was great. I really enjoyed the Macaulay School in Chattanooga.
Yeah. Did you, did you earn going to a boarding school?
Oh, like, yeah.
Did you get in trouble?
Oh, my God. Like, I was always in trouble. The whole
like,
thing.
With what?
I was a bad kid. That's how I most identify myself, as a bad kid. Bad.
Yeah. No wonder you didn't fit in with the church.
Everything. It was mischief. You know, later on when I figured out about drinking, that went south right away. I mean, alcohol and me don't mix. And like I'm a blackout, I'm a recovering alcohol. I haven't drank in 20 years.
Wow.
And I can't imagine why I ever would again when I see drunk people. It doesn't seem like the stuff.
Makes your stomach twirl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, why do people do that?
Well, you know, and I like to sort of present, as if possible, a best version of myself to the world. And when you drink, you just act like, I mean, people when they drink act stupid to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But back in the day, you were drinking a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I tried, but from the beginning, you know, my first drink, I passed out, and the babysitter basically let me stay in the bushes out in the yard. Second time I drank, I picked a fight with, believe it or not, a gang here in Mountain Brook is what they called themselves, a gang of overprivileged white kids. Pretty funny, man. The hard streets of Mountain Brook. But it was just always like that. Like, I think I messed with someone's girl that day, or I don't know what. I can't remember. When I would drink, it was on. It was going to be whatever.
So you were like, you were wild and bad.
Oh yeah, wide open.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And so how often were you drinking at that point? And what age was that?
That was, you know, I guess I was like 14 or 15.
That's about the same time I started too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was drinking and using, and then eventually, like, you know, other drugs came into play, but I was definitely drinking by 14 or 15, so.
Yeah, I didn't figure out about anything, marijuana or anything, until I got to Macaulay in Chattanooga.
All right, so Chattanooga taught you about the
weed? You know, being a third-party institution, a boarding school, like, I had to, it wasn't my parents, I couldn't manipulate them emotionally or anything, it was, the rules were the rules, so I learned to get a little bit smarter. I would get blue slips and go spend the night with my friends, and when their parents asked what's wrong with me, I would just say, I'm sick, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
But then I figured out about marijuana, and in college, the drug game kicked in pretty hard.
Like you were selling drugs, or you were using drugs more?
Well, both.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I got to college. The girl I started hanging out with was into benzos and psychedelics and, you know, pills and pot and the whole you know, Grateful Dead thing. And so my uncle was a lawyer in Memphis at the time, a criminal lawyer, maybe more criminal than lawyer, but. He was, my parents said, whatever you do when you go to Memphis, don't call your uncle, he's evil. So, of course, I called the dude.
Of course, because you probably fit in better with him than actually your folks.
Absolutely. He was a real charismatic, interesting guy. He was on his third wife, a third his age. Very interesting. He gave me what amounts to a gram of LSD crystal and a bunch of good marijuana and turned me loose on widespread panic tour and said, go sell all this stuff. And I was rolling in the money for a college kid and having fun, and people liked me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so you finally found, like, where you fit in.
Yep.
So how did you, I mean, that seems like it can be a pretty toxic, you know, environment. I mean, especially, like, as a young kid, like, how did you hit your bottom? Like, what did that look like? Or, I mean, was there no bottom?
Yeah, no, there was various bottoms. I mean, I left Memphis because... there were federal authorities probing into my dealings that were previously insulated because the local authorities were friends with my uncle, mm-hmm. which mainly included growing marijuana. But we burned two houses down to the same owner, so people started putting things together. Also, my drinking and drug use had led to just depression, poor performance in school, everything that you would expect. I mean, like, I was in the drug game. I was not doing school. I was passing school.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And so, like, one night, you know, I got the call, and it was like, I'm leaving town. Everything felt like, you know, it's bad. And I showed up on my dad's doorstep at 9 a.m. with my eyes probably rolling around in my head, and he said, oh, shit. Well, let's go see these guys at this mental health facility, you know.
And that's how you kind of got introduced to,
It was the first time I went to a treatment facility. It was Bradford. But I remember the meeting. I said, I'm not an alcoholic, so I'm going to do this outpatient thing. They all kind of went along with it. But, you know, within a year, I was back, and I was in an inpatient thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I went directly into detox, right into inpatient, and worked my way through outpatient four times.
Right,
so.
Right.
And so what drugs were you doing, like, the most of?
You know, the ones that were, you know, real bad for my system were all pills, and those would be any kind of opiates I could get my hands on, and, you know, benzos, Valium, Xanax, all that. And then I really like acid. I like psychedelics and all that stuff, too. But I would say the ones that were just clipping me the hardest were the booze and the pills.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked all the psychedelics too. I always had a harder time getting those compared to, like, getting weed or pills or any of that stuff. It was much more socially acceptable to ask for pills instead of asking for acid or something.
Yeah, well, I had my uncle, and I had the Grateful Dead family.
Yeah.
So I just got baptized in the fire up there.
Of course. And so did you travel around with the Grateful Dead?
You know, it's Grateful Dead family stuff, offshoots. Okay. So at that time, you know, it was 1995. So it was that stuff was, you know, pretty much wrapping up. And but they had Further Festival and the other ones and all this Grateful Dead iterations. And of course, Widespread Panic, the southern version of the Grateful Dead,
right.
I guess you could oversimplify and say. That was my scrape.
That was yours?
Yeah.
And so you went to the treatment center the first time, you know, like you maybe got sober a little bit, then you had to go back. And so how many times did you have to go back to treatment?
Well, I went twice. And so I went in 97 and again in 98. And then 98 was inpatient. And, you know, I never drank again. I did do pills again much, much later. So,
yeah.
You know, I got fat and did the, I went back to the old cliche game. I was going to do the white picket fence. Yeah.
Awesome.
Got fat, had some kids, built a square career, which is going quite well still.
Yeah.
But thank God, I don't know how.
Yeah. So, give us like a little bit of like a snapshot of like how crazy it was, like as you're going through those treatment centers and about to like kind of turn the corner on like your addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, how crazy was it?
I mean, you know, it's blurry, you know, hard to remember. I just remember depression, fear, paranoia, feeling alone. You know, I was afraid of the cops all the time.
I mean, but why did you feel like you needed to, I mean, what switch flipped where you were like, I need to go get help for this? I mean, was it just like solely your parents or was it
no,
something
else? No, in 1998, I got set up by this guy. It wasn't a snitch deal. He and a cop robbed me and I was moving a lot of ecstasy pills and microdots, mescaline, stuff like that. And they basically lured me to this place. And I'd been on quite a binge. I even skipped my statistics final, so another year of college was imminent, and I didn't seem to care. I had this guy from the projects telling me I need to take a shower. He was my pot dealer. And, you know, I just
That's
was,
pretty bad.
I was a mess, you know, and like I wound up on this hill, you know, I was supposed to be doing a whole host of other things, but I wound up on this hill just messed up out of my gourd. Came back down and this cop was waiting there for me. He already knew where all my stuff was. So the guy was interfacing, set me up, scared the shit out of me. They didn't arrest me. But it was frightening. And,
of course.
And also Jen, who's now my wife of 18 years, was my girlfriend at the time. And she had enough and was, I'm leaving. So,
She's leaving you.
Yeah, because I was selling blow out the house, selling morphine and all kinds of opiates and different things out of our
And you were out of your mind, it sounds like. You were just like.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how did, at that point, like, how did you actually feel about yourself? I mean, did you feel like you were living life, or did you feel like you were kind of struggling, or did you hate yourself, or I mean, just give us a snapshot of how you felt about it.
Yeah, I think I was kind of in a feed my head mode. I really hadn't gotten the full picture that you know, the on down this same road was basically death or some kind of incarceration or really an uglier version of my life than I wanted. So that stuff hadn't really, I was still young and immature, that stuff hadn't really dawned on me, but it started becoming more and more clear.
Yeah. So what about, so you get clean and sober, you have that, you know, where the cop sets you up or, you know, your friend sets you up and the cop, you know, basically kind of takes all your stuff. Mm-hmm. You wind up at the treatment center, but then like, what happens next? I mean, do you just stay sober or like, what's the work that you had to do in order to get sober?
Yeah, I got into AA big time. And it was good. I mean, I think the 12 steps are a great program and everything. But I think, you know, we're mind, body, and spirit. And, you know, that's why we're doing yoga now, because there was always something missing from my program. Like, I had no way of controlling my mind.
Yeah.
You know, like I would go and I would sit in the meetings and hear all the stuff and I could identify and agree with the philosophy, apply it, and even share it.
Yeah.
But when, you know, at the end of the day, I just felt ill inside, like this anxious. I always felt anxious, you know, revved up, a little bit manic,
sure.
Some depression, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely a live wire too. But I mean, I found a lot of, you know, I found a lot of peace in the 12 steps, but, and I'm still pretty active in it. Are you still pretty active in it or?
Yeah, not as much as I used to be.
Okay.
I mean, I'm still, you know, hang with all those guys and I go to meetings some, but
okay.
Not nearly as much as I probably should.
Gotcha. And, you know, you reached a spot where you started to do yoga. Like, how did that come to be?
So that was my, I guess that was my third detox, you know, or my third rehab, second detox, third rehab. And, yeah, I started smoking grass in 07, and that went fine, but except for the fact that I was looking for something outside to fix what was wrong with me inside. So, like, you know, ultimately marijuana wasn't strong enough,
right?
And so I went and I was stoned all the time now too, of course. So trying to conduct a square job while you're stoned is oftentimes not that easy. So
super hard.
It would be stressful. And
Well,
what do you need for stress? You need Xanax.
Right.
Of course. So
that makes sense to me.
And was legally prescribed Xanax. Well, I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, by God, they actually feel good.
Yeah.
Turns out I like Valium and Klonopin too. But anyway, it went from
there.
Sounds
like you like everything.
Oh yeah. And then, well, so I started seeing a psychologist, you know, and I went down this whole pharmacopoeia hole of like, I'm depressed, or you might be slightly hypomanic or bipolar or whatever label that they would assign it. And so I went through every SSRI and
yeah.
I don't even know what the hell all that is. None of it worked. And it was all trying to put my faith in something that would not work. Basically,
yeah.
And so I wound up in severe depression, which led me back to opiates, which led to, I don't know, a couple things. I'd fall out in public a couple times and stuff like that. Started doing sloppy shit. You know, my whole life got sloppier. People would be coming over. I'd wake up in the morning, my wife would find a bag of drugs on the floor, and I've got children. So,
yeah.
Like, we were like, oh shit, this is bad. I was depressed. I felt bad about myself. So, you know.
You get depressed a lot?
Not anymore.
No. I mean, do you think it was like a byproduct of the drug consumption or?
Yeah, I believe it had everything to do with not getting enough physical exercise, not being able to control my mind or meditate. I wasn't meditating effectively at least, or praying effectively, which I think are important because you got the body, the spirit, and then the mind. All those drugs, you know, they may do one thing. They may selectively prohibit the reuptake of too much serotonin and keep you from going in waves, but they have other side effects and problems. So it just led to a bunch of depression, which I continued to treat. Well, I just went old school. I said, I know how to treat this. Opiates do a good job,
right,
for a short period of time.
Yeah. And so you kind of got, so you were in AA, and then all of a sudden, like, you had like a little relapse, and you know, you kind of spiraling out of control. But is that where yoga got introduced to you?
Well, after that detox, so I was in AA, you know, the smoking the pot, and I kept going to AA, and then I was on the legally prescribed meds, kept going to AA. Then when I started doing the other stuff, I quit.
Yeah.
So all that just wound up in basically wanting to die. And that was something that I always heard AA people talk about before, and I thought, that old goat, his life just sucks because he's just an old crunchy goat. And I'm like, no, I understand that now.
Yeah.
I understand wanting to die.
I totally get it too.
So that sucked. And I was like, wow, we got to do something. And so a friend of mine who happens to be in the program was there one day on my bottom and drove me to Bradford again.
Gotcha.
Yep.
What a hell of a friend.
Yep. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Jared. And then Shay, of course.
And they taught you yoga in there?
Well, you know, now, okay. I had been doing a little bit of yoga.
What kind?
I had been doing some Ashtanga. Akasha was coming over and sending some lovely teachers that came and spent time, and they would come over once a week for a couple years.
To your house?
To my house, because I was not going to do yoga in public, because that is for women.
I mean, I said that too.
You know, that's crazy, but
I know,
looking back, that's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I know, I'd say that all the time. When I share my story, I always say, like, you know, I said, you know, the lady comes up to me and she's like, I'm supposed to teach yoga, and I'm like, that's for girls. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I mean, it like so ego. I mean, yeah. There was so much resistance to it, like from the very first time.
Exactly. So, that was me. And, you know, Jen and I went on our 10-year anniversary to this place called Maldives, and a fellow named Siju also taught us yoga. And he taught, and I could tell his was authentic. It was not a Patabi Joyce lineage. I didn't fully understand what he was telling me at the time. But when I went through all, so I knew it made me feel high afterwards and feel good. Like my brain was calm. Like I would acknowledge that and then go smoke a bowl or eat some pills, you know.
Right.
And but so,
so you're doing both worlds.
Oh yeah,
yeah, living in both worlds.
Oh yeah, but I knew it had this effect that was unmistakable, even in a short term. And so they were trying to teach yoga in Bradford, but you know Alabama is a little bit of a redneck state, and you know yoga is definitely. So I'd be doing yoga on the floor with the teacher lady who's doing some real real soft stuff. I was used to jamming out Ashtanga style a little bit. And anyway, that was frustrating. And the dudes stepping over me with their dirty boots and snickering was sort of frustrating. So I left Bradford against medical advice, checked myself into Akasha's teacher training program. Akasha's a Yogi Bhajan student, a Kundalini guy, but he also has trained Ashtanga quite a bit. I'm real grateful for that.
Yeah.
I checked into his teacher training and Jennifer, you know, because like the food, and I was like, this is an unhealthy environment. I know what I need to do. I need to go to AA meetings and I need to do this yoga and live a healthy, clean lifestyle and have a positive mental attitude.
Right. How'd you get there, though?
I was in the shower and all of a sudden a song came on in my head that was not a song that I would ever listen to, but it somehow was it. Part of a shift in my consciousness that gave me some clarity as to what I needed to do.
And you walked right into the teacher training course. And what, I mean, was that a bit much to go from one extreme to the next?
It was me and 16 women, and they were attractive, and that was helpful.
Okay, because they kept you interested.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was very much more interesting than Bradford with the rednecks with the muddy boots stepping over me and, you know, talking and smoking cigarettes and stuff. So, yeah, I knew it was good. I knew Akasha, you know, you can see the guy, he's like beaming with energy. You know, have you met Akasha yet?
No, I have not met him.
Yeah, so I knew the dude had the truth, but I just needed to do the work. And so I was psyched really to be locked in he starts out with a 2-week intensive where you're there from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Wow.
And I was so beat down, I didn't mind singing Kundalini chants. I was just like, whatever, dude.
I'll do it. Yeah. I mean, you know, like you get to a spot where you're, you know, desperate for change and you're really, I mean, I was willing to do anything, you know, like they said, you know, my fourth time through treatment there, if they would have told me to stand in the corner and on one hand, I probably would have done that, you know, like that's just like where I was. So you just spent it in a yoga class. I spent mine in like a, you know, in AA basically. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, did you feel like the teacher training was actually like helping you a lot with your sobriety? Just like the shedding the layers or?
Yeah, I did. I could understand by this time that I had a massive ego problem in terms of like I had no self-identity, not an accurate self-identity, basically. You know, I was either too small or too tall, you know, always, you know, Alice is never the right size, but I just... and so I knew that what I was doing in there was, you know, yoga chitta vritti nirodha, control the fluctuations of the mind, which were an issue. And like, I knew that I needed to learn to love myself for just who I am. I mean, you know, which was not something I was accustomed to even considering.
Yeah.
You know, I was taught to be very hard on yourself and always try to do better, you know, and win. You have to win.
Win.
It's America, dude.
We got to be number one.
Yeah, number one.
Number one.
So, you know, like this was different. You know, I was going to take 2 weeks out of my life to try to do something for myself. And that resonated with me. And actually, I like all the Sanskrit. I like the yogi philosophy. You know, I was looking for something other than what I considered the cartoon version of the Bible, which was what I was being taught and what we would discuss in churches.
Right.
I'd long abandoned that. So, you know, it gave me a lot of those things, and it more than anything, the Ashtanga thing gave me a way in the morning to go in and reset, and just like, no matter what I was going through, that would help me at least try to get back to square one.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like it did that for me too. I mean, it's like a daily, it helped me with the daily reprieve, you know, like exactly. there was like this consistent, and I think it's consistent for all addicts, that we get to a spot where we're consistently kind of like in a nagging state, like something's not right all of the time. Mm-hmm. And even if you're going to AA, I feel like this happens. But like for some reason, when I entered into the yoga class, and it sounds like you had a similar experience, it's that you reset it. You know, like you start the day fresh, and you know, like it's the hardest part of your day, but it's also the most rewarding part of your day, and you can learn all these lessons and all that stuff. It's pretty, I mean, it's taught me so much. I mean, it's a huge gift. I mean, so why do you practice? Why do you do it?
I'm afraid not to. Aren't you?
Sort of. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say it's all out of fear. I mean, there's all kinds of things that push me in my yoga practice, everything from my ego to fear, but there are also good motivations as well. I mean, like
what?
Well, I get fed there, like my body needs that, and my mind needs to be quiet. So like the ability to not have that nagging thing you're talking about,
yeah,
by like just making a decision and going and doing something, that's like hugely revolutionary for me. My spiritual training prior to this was, you know, throwing up pleas into the void and trying to do better about my meditation and trying to, I couldn't understand, make it happen.
Like, yeah.
What I
so this
understand.
Is much more practical now. That, oh, yeah. That yoga is much more practical.
Yep.
Is that what I'm hearing you
cuts
say?
Cuts the ego chatter and lets you connect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that, you know, connection and community, I feel like, are the most important parts of, you know, what yoga, or at least Ashtanga yoga in my case, like, helps me do. Well, why do you think Ashtanga yoga specifically helps you? Like, I mean, you know, you've tried Kundalini and all that stuff, but you didn't stay there.
Kundalini helps me too. It's not my jam right now. It's not, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's these intense people I go up in this thing with and they get me in the Mysore room every morning. Like you mentioned community and you mentioned connection. You know, I never, like we talked in the beginning, I never felt I belonged or whatever. I was a fish out of water. But, you know, the people that I practice with in Birmingham Yoga are people that they're awesome. They're colorful. They're tight. You know, they're intense. And like, they get me. I get them, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they tolerate me.
They're your people.
Yeah. And they have to listen to all my bullshit. I was sitting over here cursing while I'm trying to do Marichasana back bends. I'm sitting there start crying before back bends just because I don't know what. And so they know I'm insane, but they just let me do, and I let them, and it's great. It's a good community.
I mean, you know, Birmingham's like one of my favorite places to come because, like, I feel like you guys are really colorful. I mean, you included, and I mean, other people in the room, they all got like big personalities, and, you know, they got the little southern drawl that they got, and it's kind of funny, but it's amazing community though. You know, it's really awesome. And I could see where it could be like really supportive and, you know.
It is. And we don't, you know, Akash is, you know, he's big in the Kundalini thing. We don't have an authorized teacher here. So, you know, I mean, he travels a lot. So, so you coming down here is a big deal for us because, you know, you need a teacher. I think you need an Ashtanga teacher.
Yeah.
To keep you. Here's where you need to be.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, and Akasha does that too when he comes in. I mean, he's good with the anatomy. He's good with all of it. But it's just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like quite an honor to travel around to these places and, you know, support you guys because, I mean, for even not having like an authorized teacher, I mean, you guys got a big community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
and there's Denise, and she's authorized.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing. She was there this weekend too.
Yeah,
so.
She's just now been authorized recently, and we're real proud of her. But she's right now she's on a career path with her legal stuff. So,
yeah. So why do you know, do you think that Ashtanga yoga like is the thing that really has got you to the other side of that manic and depressive state that you felt like you were kind of going in?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's a daily reprieve, man. Every day I woke, you know, Saturday I woke up and I just decided I was going to be an ass apparently to everyone, even put some stuff on Facebook somewhere deep inside me knowing that just to piss people off.
Right.
So that I have the every day's a new day. So like, yeah, I go in there and no matter what crazy trip I'm on, it eventually finds the ground for me.
So why, you know, we were talking a little bit about like kind of the, some of the injuries and stuff, you know, back bends and Mari Chasnay and some other things are kind of hurting you. Like, what kind of lessons are being brought up for you?
Well,
I mean, what's it teaching you?
The beginning of my shoulder injury, I was down in Mexico at a Grateful Dead festival. And so I was at the pool and I was, and you know, like, I'm not gonna lie, I like to show off. So, and like, I do arm balances, inversions and all, I can do all that stuff very easily. Like, what I need to be way more open. I need to work on my form and my alignment, but I can do all that stuff. So I'm practicing and just throwing a lot of extra flair, and you've seen me and told me to stop doing that.
Yeah.
But I was probably showing off. I think I strained it, maybe slightly tore my labrum down there. So there's an ego lesson that happens every day. You know,
what's it? What's the lesson?
The lesson is I need to be right size. I need to do the practice that's being prescribed to me here and quit trying to make myself be okay because I'm better than other people or whatever the ego trip is.
Yeah.
I'm not fully sure. I totally get it, but I'm a show off and I need to quit. You know, but it's easier said than done.
Of course. I mean, it's hard. I mean, especially when you're physically gifted at like one aspect of the practice or a couple aspects of the practice. And you know, and really you need to learn the other aspects, you know? Mm-hmm. So instead of reinforcing the, just the good, you know, you gotta reinforce like you getting better at the stuff that you're not so good at.
Right.
Yeah. And that's like a lot of times that comes as a lesson in humility and kind of right sizing and stuff.
And it seems like I have to kind of almost like relearn it every day. Like I'm not quick like that. You know, a little slow. But the real trip lately for me has been this idea of, you know, I'm 41 now, and you know, you thought my Akasha used to always say that when you get to a certain age, you start giving. We give you postures a while. When you get to a certain age, you start giving back postures. And then eventually you give them all up, you know. And like, I'm not good with that, bub.
Yeah. No. How does that make you feel?
I am not doing a good job of applying acceptance to my mortality. Anything less than total domination is pretty much unacceptable. And that's the way I was raised. And so, like, this is a lesson that I'm learning every day is, you know what? You know, this is all temporary. And, you know, you need to be able to be okay even if, you know, you're not where you think you should be. Because eventually you will not be where you think you should be. So trying to gain acceptance of my mortality and just of the physical realm here is the trip I'm on right now. And I would not say that I'm handling it gracefully. I mean, you know, in our Mysore room, like, I probably sit over there and grumble and curse and,
you're doing a little grumbling this weekend.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Like I kind of almost do every day. It's really frustrating.
Yeah.
I would like to learn the lesson and move on, but. Yeah.
What would it take for you to learn the lesson?
God, I don't even want to know. I just hope, good point. Is that a rhetorical question?
I don't know.
You know, I need to just find some acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah, those lessons are really difficult. I mean, especially like, you know, going backwards is not easy for me either. I mean, I've had to go backwards because of injuries and, you know, emotional times and stressful times. Like it feels like you got to kind of retreat a little bit, you know, or go back to the primary or go back to, you know, like the fundamentals, the breathing or whatever it is. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So what do you think, you know, like we talked a little bit about like teachers and stuff, but I mean, for you, is it important for you to like check in with a teacher? Like, is it important for you to have someone like who holds you accountable or what's a teacher mean to you?
I mean, you know, like I kind of do wish that I had a little more accountability going on here in Birmingham. But then again, I would be a huge pain in the ass for whosoever job that was. But, you know, because I'm sure they'd get spewed on about my crap.
Right.
But I would still nonetheless, I think that would be great. I think it's important to have a Ashtanga lineage teacher that you ultimately look to say, what's the final answer here? What do I need to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think that is valuable and important.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, a lot of the yoga I see going, you know, I don't even know to what end anybody's doing. Like, I have no idea what all this commercial yoga is.
Yeah, I don't really either.
Like, it's supposed to be a practice and inward journey, but I don't know. I don't get it. But sometimes I go visit those classes for fun. You know, to show off,
right.
Of course.
Do your arm balances?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what other lessons have you been taught in your practice? I mean, it sounds like you're got one going on in your like shoulder injury and kind of feeling like you're going backwards. But what other stuff or what other lessons has helped your sobriety? Like, how does that translate?
I think that one lesson that I've also been having rammed down my throat in conjunction with the injury is this idea that I need to let go of just this strength that I cling to for everything. It's I like go to my guns for everything.
Yeah.
And I need to open my heart and I hate the idea of that because I started doing back bends more intensely and then it's just life got crazy. I started getting honest with people in my life and started not being able to live the same way I was.
Yeah.
I can't really explain that. Yeah. I blame it on the back bends.
Okay.
And anyway, it was uncomfortable, this heart opening, and I've tried not to open it too fast.
But you don't really know how to do anything part way, do you?
I mean, not really.
You went like 0 to 100.
Well, so I'm back to zero right now. I'm just figuring if I'm cold-hearted and just shut down, that'll protect me somehow.
Heartless now.
Yeah, but I need to be more from the heart and stuff, and yeah.
So you have open heart? You don't have an open heart right now?
I mean, I think that it's a process.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I think I'm going through a trough with it. And did you notice I tricked you and didn't do my dropbacks today?
I know. I watched.
Yeah.
I watched you kind of storm out of the Mysore room today.
Do you see how I lose it every time I get to back bends?
You sort of kind of pouted on the way out of the Mysore room. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cute.
So I can't explain that other than... I don't know. There's a lesson to be learned.
But it seems like something's like bubbling up, you know, and that's like what the practice does. And I don't know if there's a lesson to be learned, but maybe there's like a, you know, something that needs to be acknowledged, you know, not necessarily accepted, but like acknowledge of our, you know, our own stuff or whatever. I mean, it's actually vulnerability, you know, and a lot of times vulnerability is not acceptance. Vulnerability is actually just you being like, this is what I'm going through. You know, like it or not, it doesn't feel good or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got taught those lessons too. So.
Well, I'm just glad you weren't here like 2 months ago because I would storm out in much grander fashion.
Okay.
That. Yeah.
Huffing and puffing even stronger.
Oh yeah, just pissed.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about like what you're doing nowadays because you got like a lot of, you know, kind of cool stuff happening. And
yeah.
So, you know, you got your square job.
Yep.
But you got other stuff going on. What else you got going on?
Okay, so I do some land development, some other little stuff, and you know, investments and things. But the most fun thing that I have going on is we throw theme parties. We have this company called C4 Productions, which stands for Cosmic Celebrations of Collective Consciousness.
Okay.
Collective consciousness being sort of a philosophy that I sort of believe in, which is essentially that we're all connected.
Sure.
And that we should treat each other as such. And I won't bore you with all my long-winded philosophical stuff, but it's, so what do I do? I throw costume parties, basically real big budget, high production costume parties, and Birmingham was a town only a little over 1 million people, you know. We have to pull from all ages, all genres. So like I put music and art together that'll, you know, appeal to all those people. And people show up and when they're in their costumes and all of a sudden they just feel like they can act normal.
Right.
And I think that people realize that all day they run around in some costume that's been assigned to them or that they've capitulated towards. And I think it's important for people to find their authentic self, which yoga has helped me do.
Yeah.
Also.
And so you're trying to help people find that in these parties that you're throwing.
Yeah, and I also get a huge kick out of it. Like I really, really enjoy watching everybody come together and have these real peak experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like connection and community, just like how the yoga. I mean, I've heard you talk a little bit about it, and I mean, a lot of them sound really exciting. I mean,
yeah.
If I was here for one, I'd
you dig it. And we have a sober table, yellow balloons, just like on Dead Tour.
Yeah.
And we have Dance Safe and all kinds of things because people do drugs, yeah. But people do drugs everywhere.
Yeah.
You know.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you for being on the Heartbreak Kids. I mean, you shared some, like, really awesome insight into, like, not only your story, but, like, kind of how the yoga is working, and I don't know, it's really intriguing stuff. And so, you know, thanks for being a student. Thanks for supporting me when I'm coming down here to Birmingham. Like, I love you guys. Like, you know, we have like a little party over here every year that I come, and it's really awesome. So I really appreciate your support and thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Taylor. Thanks for taking care of us Alabama people. Yeah, it's really a pleasure. Looking forward to Costa Rica.
Yeah, that's going to be so much fun. So thanks for being on the show.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.